Okay, so I'm here from the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and my colleague Joanna Olson was supposed to present on her work with trans youth and hormone treatment. Unfortunately, on her way down here today, there was some incident with the train she was on, and she may still show up, but I was kind of counting on her to talk a little bit more about our program. But since she didn't do that, before I get started on my slides, I do just want to say a little bit about the services that we have for trans youth. We take a team approach. We have comprehensive care, so that means health care, hormones, mental health care, and case management. And we work with youth. We work with youth, so under 24. And let's see what else we have. So in addition to those services, we have some other programs that really help to support trans youth in Los Angeles. And I'm going to talk in detail about the program that I supervise, which is TG AIM. But I can also afterwards say a little bit about Tranny Rockstar. Bambi Salcedo heads that up, but she wasn't able to be here today. So all of us are in the same division. All these programs are in the same place for transgender youth in Los Angeles. And we primarily serve youth that have Medi-Cal. We, depending on our funding levels, we also do provide care to uninsured youth. And if a youth does happen to come from a family that has health insurance, we also can provide the medical care for them. Our mental health services are only for low-income youth who have Medi-Cal. So, transgender adult identity mentoring. This is an HIV prevention program. And Leslie Clark and Miguel Martinez also work with me on this. Leslie Clark, I'll say a little bit more about some work that she does, but they were both instrumental in getting the funding for this program. It is funded by the CDC. So who do we work with? The program is focused on transgender identified youth, male to female, as well as youth of color, ages 14 to 24. However, no interested youth are turned away. So if someone doesn't identify as male to female, if they identify as female to male, or transgender but not in either of those categories, they can still participate. The reason that this is the target population is because of the data that suggests, and this is what the CDC is going by, that transgender youth of color who identify as male to female are at significantly increased risk for HIV infection. And so that's why they're looking for programs to address that issue and have provided funding to our site as well as several other sites around the country for what they're calling locally developed innovative programs. There we are. Innovative, locally developed programs. So we got our funding in 2006, and it goes through September 2009. What we've done is we've partnered with several other transgender-serving agencies in Los Angeles, and currently the partnering is with, so it's between Children's Hospital Los Angeles, Bienestar, and APAIT. And Bienestar primarily focuses on working with the Latino community. They serve both transgender persons as well as men who have sex with men, gay-identified Latinos. And all of their services are provided in Spanish. And APAIT is Asian Pacific AIDS Intervention Team. So they primarily work with Asian Pacific Islander population. And at CHLA, we have a real variety of youth in terms of ethnicity and race who come to us for services. And so the idea was to integrate into existing case management programs this Project AIM. So that could be a whole other presentation, but TG AIM is adapted from Project AIM. And that's where Dr. Clark comes in. She and her colleagues developed Project AIM a little over 10 years ago, and it is an empirically validated group-based program for middle school youth that shows effects for HIV prevention in terms of reduced there's a lot of results from the research, but the positive things are that it shows increased intentions to delay sex, increased intentions to stop having sex if the youth has already started, and it also showed improved academic and behavioral results. And this was in middle school students in the South. So I was also involved in a program that was also funded by the CDC to update Project AIM and implement it in community-based agencies in Los Angeles. So what we did is we took that empirically validated program for middle school youth and said, let's, you know, massage it a bit, make it appropriate for trans youth, and integrate it into the services that are already existing at CHLA and the other partnering agencies. So we use Project AIM as a basic framework, and it's based on the motivational theory of possible selves, and I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with this, but essentially possible selves, the theory of possible selves says that we all are motivated by a balance of our negative and positive future selves, these things that we can envision. So the negative things are what we don't want to be, that we young people may see in their community. They don't want to be homeless. They don't want to be in jail. They don't want to be in a gang. Those are feedback we got from the Project AIM research and participants. The positives may be envisioning oneself as a doctor, a mechanic, a teacher, a mother. So in order to have the best outcome, all of us need a balance between these two things. Because if all you have is negative, you know what you don't want, but you don't really know how to go towards what you do want, because you can't see yourself actually being able to finish high school or go to college or do these things. And then on the flip side, if all you have is a positive future self, this isn't typically the issue for a lot of the youth that we work with, but that also doesn't work out too well, because then you're not really prepared for obstacles and barriers and how to deal with challenges. So that's why the balance of the two is so important. And then Dr. Clark and her colleagues kind of put this together to say, you know what, this has predicted academic success and jobs and staying out of jail. That was some research done by Daphna Oyserman. This really may predict also reduced HIV risk, because if you have a future that you care about, that you can envision yourself working as that nurse or working as that mechanic, then you actually have something to protect, a reason to use all of this good facts that people have given you about condoms, and here's how you use them, and here's why you should. But until you take it to heart and feel like you have an actual future to protect, you may not actually act behaviorally on these things that have been taught. So what we did is we took Project AIM and we tailored it for TG youth. That was a big, long process that really only has finally kind of come to the point where we have what we're calling our final curriculum. Because what I did is I headed up a group of case managers from the different partnering agencies, and week after week, we kind of did what I would call our own little focus groups, because they were just putting in a lot of information and looking at the curriculum and saying, this will work and this won't work. Well, we could take this activity, but we need to change it a little bit. Getting a lot of feedback. Excuse me. And then integrating all of that feedback from the case managers who are people who are themselves trans women or work in community agencies with trans youth. And these were the areas that we really identified as being essential to make sure we at least have something about them in the program. So life skills, role models, and coping skills, identity and self-acceptance, cultural factors, history and community, the stigma of being transgender or transsexual, issues around family, relationships, and disclosure, the issue of sex work. Thank you. Oh, excuse me. And also providing either resources or actual information about medical, legal, education, and employment. I'm so sorry, I feel like I swallowed dust. Okay. So what we ended up with, this program has individual and group sessions. There's 5 individual sessions. That includes, and they're each about 1 hour. So that does include a pretty thorough intake where we get kind of your typical psychosocial information. Where do you live? Are you with your family or not? Mental health history, drug use, sexual behavior risk, things like that. But we also developed kind of our own little instrument, I guess you'd say, to help the youth talk about how they conceptualize their own gender. So not just, do you identify as MTF, but we use the little like umbrella and have different terms underneath it and say if they're familiar with the terms, which sort of do you most identify with? And then we also use a continuum of male to female and say, you mark on this continuum where you feel you are. Because a lot of the youth that we work with, they kind of have heard transgender, but they're really not quite sure. And of course, they're young. Some of them that we've had in the program are as young as 14. So they're still really exploring who they are and needing to have a place to talk about that. But we want to know sort of baseline when they start, how are they thinking of themselves? The other sessions cover legacy. And that's a really important concept in TG AIM as it is in Project AIM for middle school students. And that's the idea that we all have a legacy. We all have something that we contribute, something that we will be remembered for, something that we contribute to our communities. And it can be good or bad, and we talk a lot about that, so that if you know about legacy and you want to build your legacy, you can actually have agency in that and choose your legacy as opposed to it just happening, and perhaps it might not be the kind of legacy you want to have. We help them to set goals through a timeline. We do career exploration. So some of you, I can pass this around. This is the one we use. I'm not saying you have to use this one, but so you can get an idea of the kind of things that we do. And one of the sessions is also called How Does Now Affect My Future? So really helping the youth to connect, what am I doing right now, and how might that connect or not connect to the future that I want? So for example, someone may identify that they're interested in being a veterinary assistant and they want to finish high school. But if right now they're not going to class or they're drinking a lot, then it's to help them see that, is this really going to put you on that trajectory to where you want to be? And how can we help you get where you want to be, as opposed to letting things happen to you and ending up not where you want to be? And then preparing for the future. So we also do resumes. And for the trans youth, because a lot of them are a little older, so they're in their late teens, early 20s, these resumes are actually real resumes that they could use, as opposed to in the Project AIM for middle school students, it's more of an exercise in envisioning yourself as an adult, because if you're in seventh grade, you're most likely not going to go out and use your resume to get a job. So it's not focused on typing it up and having it look really professional. It's more just, this is what you do when you're an adult and you do have valuable experiences. We try to do both of those in TG AIM so that we're saying to the youth, we believe in you, you have valuable experiences, you have skills, you have the ability to get a job, but we're also helping them put an actual resume together that is usable. And then also the case managers check in monthly for 6 months to a year. And there's also case management going along with this. So if someone needs medical care, someone needs mental health care, if someone needs help with their school, maybe they've stopped going to school because they're not comfortable at the school or they're experiencing some kind of discrimination, then the case manager would hook them up with appropriate services and assistance. And sometimes the TG AIM case managers do a lot, and sometimes they don't have to do a lot of that because the youth is already hooked up with other services, like maybe in our transgender program at CHLA. This is, oh no, it looks kind of funny because it's showing up. That says aspiration declaration in symbol language. Okay. I guess this computer doesn't read that font. So it does, it says aspiration declaration, and you have the youth fill out I and their name, aspire to reach these future goals. So really having them articulate what their goals are and helping them to look at what's going to help them reach that goal and what might get in their way. So some of the things that people say are maybe I'm like, I really go for what I want, and maybe something that would keep me from reaching is, you know, I like to party. So it would just help them to see these different aspects of themselves. Okay. Now the group sessions, those are really important. They're 2 to 3 hours. And one of the big things that we did is we put together a PowerPoint presentation that we're calling Transgender Legacies. So we link legacy in general, a lot of the people that you learn about in school, maybe Martin Luther King or Cesar Chavez, some of the I guess I'll call them more mainstream people that young people understand have legacies. That comes from the Project AIM program. So we've taken that and connect. There are many, many, for the youth, there are many, many transgender people who have wonderful legacies for you to be proud of. And so we put together a slideshow, and that's really something that the youth have told us is very important to them, and that they didn't know that there are people who work in politics and as doctors and things like that, and professors and advocates. So seeing those positive images of trans people really is very helpful. And these are just the titles of the different sessions. So we do a lot with communication, that's one thing. So the first one is legacy. The next group is what lifts you up, what holds you back. And so that's talking about how do people help you, or how do you help yourself, and what's not gonna get you where you wanna be. And we have different activities they do. What's your style is both communication and how you present yourself. So we talk a lot about issues of passive, aggressive, or assertive style of communication. We do role plays, but we also talk about like appearance and what options trans women have, and kind of helping the youth to think about context. What would you wear to a club versus to a job interview and things like that. And we have a graduation celebration where we really, where they all get a certificate, and it's kind of like a party to celebrate them finishing the program. And along the way also they get Target gift cards for $10 for finishing their individual sessions. And then they also get different incentives for the groups that apply to the philosophy or the mission of each group. So they get a journal, they get an agenda with like a calendar and stuff, they get a train case, or people call them caboodles, so that's kind of the self-presentation one, and they get like a bag to carry everything in. And then at graduation they get a portfolio with all of their work, their resume, and the different activities that they've done in it. And then we are going to have ongoing monthly support sessions for youth who've finished the program. So that's something we're going to start to implement this year. We have them do thank you notes, because in the second group we have a guest speaker, which is also a really popular part of the program. And so this was an actual thank you note from a recent group. Dearest Bambi, that was Bambi who was going to be here, was one of our guest speakers. I would like to thank you for taking time and allowing yourself to be part of TG AIM. You speaking today made me realize that no matter your age, you can still earn your degree and still make something out of your life. So here's the successes that we've experienced so far. A lot of positive feedback from participants. They're getting connection and support. The role model guest speakers are very popular. A lot of the program activities are very well received, and we didn't change them all that much from the middle school version. But like the role plays, we made up our own role plays that are a little more appropriate for trans youth. And we also have some that are HIV risk specific, like negotiating condom use and that kind of thing. They do set goals. A number of youth have started school again. A couple have gotten jobs. So we're seeing some very promising and hopeful outcomes. And just bringing together transgender youth of diverse backgrounds, because, you know, the CDC kind of said youth of color, but at least in Los Angeles, and I think this is kind of common in other communities as well, that African-American transgender youth, Latinas, and Asian and white transgender youth, there's not a lot of mixing in terms of getting to know each other and understanding their diversity, but also what they have in common and how they can support each other. So that's something that's been very helpful and positive. Challenges, recruitment has been a challenge. I think that happens a lot with community programs. Effectively facilitating the groups. Just like with so many other programs, you can have an amazing curriculum. If the facilitator is not very good and doesn't know it or doesn't believe in it, it doesn't turn out so good. So the training of facilitators has been extremely important. Just to coordinating all the different tasks is a challenge. Sometimes some of the clients have had really serious health and mental health needs that overwhelmed the case managers, and that's why I'm there as a clinical psychologist supervisor to kind of help them problem solve. What does this youth need? Is it even appropriate for her to be doing this program right now? Maybe she needs more services to help her deal with her meth addiction or with her serious mental illness that she has before she's ready to benefit from this program. And then the challenges of documenting all these different aspects and how to look at change has been a challenge. We are engaging in an evaluation, so maybe next year I'll be able to present more concrete numbers on everything. So we're doing a pre and post program questionnaire that includes these areas, risk behaviors, hope, depression, self-esteem, and an interesting area that that comes from a instrument out of University of Pennsylvania, the positive psychology work there, personal growth initiative. And that just really fits with what we're trying to do of how much does someone think about and feel confident that they can make changes in their life and grow as a person. So we're going to look at that. Chart review, process measures, you know, who came to group, what activities were done, how did the youth feel about the program. And we're going to be doing some focus groups as well as interviews with the case managers and facilitators to get their feedback on the program. And this is our promotional postcard. I can pass it around so you can see the back too. We wanted to try to design something that would attract the eye of youth, and we've gotten pretty good feedback on this as well. So, any questions about TG AIM?
How about anything? We can pretty much open up for questions now. Yes.
I had a question for the first presenter. I work at a community health center, and we do see transgender clients, and some of the providers feel comfortable providing hormone therapy, and others do not. Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about like how can we better train our providers. Working with the transgender community, because that's part of the problem is like they can see them, but they don't know exactly the process of what kind of hormone therapy, and that they don't have that specialty training.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying it's more about about clinical stuff and less about like cultural competency and sensitivity? Okay. So there's various ways that going about it, and the community health center where I work now, you know, it's all general practitioners, and there's one in particular that sort of took this on and you know, really personally was engaged in becoming knowledgeable clinically and everything else about doing trans hormones. So one thing I would say is to kind of do what I did and look at all these different protocols. Some of them are available just online for you to look at, in particular the ones from the Cal and Laura Community Health Center in New York. You just need a clinician signature to get them, and they're very comprehensive. In fact, some of the other organizations were using them or developing their own off of those, and the Cal and Laura ones are what the Community Health Center I work for now currently uses. The other thing is that there are trainers nationally that do mostly cultural competency stuff, but can also do some clinical training stuff. And I know one in particular in the Northeast who is great, and just more of the cultural competency stuff, because I'll also point you to clinical training as well. So. Where are you, by the way?
We're in Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah.
But no providers were willing to do it without lots of money. And
yeah.
Lots of money.
Right. Right. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yes.
I have two thoughts. So one is that one of the other doctoral students in my program is working on doing just that, is doing trans trainings in medical schools. So I hope that it's going to be up and coming. And I could put you in contact with her. I'm sure she'd love to talk to you if you have an interest in that. The other thing is that where I work now, which just ended a three-year grant from the Office of Minority Health to do all these cultural competency trainings for HIV service providers in our area. And so we had a bunch of money and hired top trainers on all kinds of different topics from around the country. And one in particular that we did was this trans health training, which was from Samuel Laurie, who's from Vermont. And if you know about him, yeah, he's fantastic. And so where I work, at this community health center, is kind of in an area where there's a lot of homophobia, and like transphobia is not even an issue because no one even knows what a trans person is, right? So there was definitely, Samuel Laurie came and did trainings throughout the three-year period, so like maybe three or four of them, and they were open to anyone in the organization. You did have to have your supervisor's permission, to miss a half a day or whatever. And I think the final one he did, which was an all-day training, was mandatory for like middle manager people, program managers. And I think that as he came back, more people heard about how like great training it was, great facilitator he was, and how much they learned, and how much better they felt like to be able to talk to clients, and that it kind of snowballed into something people were interested in. And some of the senior level management, which probably needed the training a little bit more than the program managers, also got engaged with it. And so it was optional, but I just think the quality of it really prompted people to keep coming back and to attend, so, because he's just great. So that's my thought.
Just to piggyback off that, I think every medical school has, or most medical schools have, a lesbian, gay, transgender social networking club at each site. I know at NYU, one of the things I did was create a one-hour lecture on lesbian, gay, transgender health concerns for the medical students. And I think in New York City, that was something that was easy to accomplish. I think at every medical school throughout the country, that would maybe be a more difficult task. But I think most of the medical schools have a lesbian, gay, transgender medical club. So one way to address that concern is to kind of target those clubs and see how they can integrate transgender health concerns within the medical school curriculum, either creating an after-hours event where they can just educate the medical students about the healthcare topics, which in that sense you're just preaching to preaching to the converted, you're not reaching everyone. Ideally, you would want to have all of the medical students that are currently being trained to obtain this information, so that even if they're not comfortable providing care to these patients, they can at least refer them to providers or organizations that can access them care. And then again, for those that are currently providing care to transgender patients, you want to keep them abreast of the current standards of care.
I also want to mention that the Gay, Lesbian, Medical Association, or GLAMA, also have resources regarding training physicians on transgender issues. You had a question?
Is very few. I probably have five trans patients, but of those five, I really practice harm reduction with four out of five of them. There's no way they're going to go through the steps, you know, that are outlined in those guidelines. So I sort of feel a little stuck in a place where there are these unachievable guidelines.
Yeah.
I'm doing the best I can with the patients I'm seeing. But, so I guess what I'm saying is having better guidelines won't necessarily help me because in the real world of the South Bronx, most of the patients I'm seeing are not, you know, gonna follow all these steps and be in therapy for 6 months. And, you know, they're there, they're using street drugs and am I going to prescribe them hormones? Of course I am, because it's better that than nothing. But so I don't know what the answer is, but I just wanted to make a statement, I guess, that fine-tuning the guidelines doesn't address this problem I have.
Well, you're not the only one that's doing harm reduction regarding to prescribing hormones. I think that's becoming more and more the norm. As of late, and I think only a few individuals who are perhaps going through that regular process. I think a lot of other people are still going and wanting to start out quickly and utilizing more of a harm reduction approach, so you're not alone in that regard. Any other questions? I have one for you. Can you talk more about how you adapted the project from for a trans population?
So, to give a little bit more information about the adaptation process, some meetings we would have. I'm trying to think. It was a very iterative process. So maybe one week, one of the case managers would really bring up a topic, let's say sex work, and we would talk a lot about that in our two-hour meeting with the case managers from the cooperating agencies, and just kind of talk about why it's an issue, what do we think the youth really need to know, and then going back to the curriculum, where could we put this in? Where would this issue be appropriate? Maybe it's under the part about communication. Maybe it'll come up in discussions about legacy and positive and negative future. So that's really a lot of what we did was identify the topics that we thought were really essential for trans youth to discuss and get information about, and then look at the existing activities in Project AIM and say, where can we put this? Where can we meld this together? Where can we insert it? Where do we need to come up with an entirely new activity in order for it to be salient and interesting and helpful for the trans youth? Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the trans youth I see, all of them are engaged in sex work.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much exclusively. They don't have any other means of making money. I was just wondering, in terms of an HIV prevention model, do you have any anecdotal experience or tales to tell us about ways of getting the kids from sex work to non-sex work?
Right. It's definitely a challenge because in the youth that we see in our agency, even though there are there's a lot of assistance available to help get them hooked up with going back to school and doing things like that. There are some youth that nevertheless decide that I don't want to go that route. You know, I can make quite a bit of money in something related in the sex world. Other youth are really doing it, and this is because I'm also a therapist and I work with them, and some people talk, it's not what they want to be doing, you know. And so part of it is making sure you know about what resources are really available to youth. And it's in our program, we don't say, oh, you're bad if you do this. It's, you know, it's more definitely a harm reduction. Like, okay, what are the risks? Maybe you're getting money right now, but what are the risks? So, well, it doesn't make me feel so good. I'm risking my health. I'm not in school right now, so I'm not getting to where I want to be. And just that's really, I think, a big part of what we're trying to do in TG AIM is help them, like I said, envision, give them the idea that, like, we believe in them and that there are options for them. And maybe there's challenges and barriers, and it's not a perfect world, but we want to help them get to that positive future that they would like to have. And in the meantime, what choices can they make? How can we help them be less risky? It might be for someone just really working with her around communication and thinking of ways to deal with it when a customer doesn't want to use a condom or different venues to be in. Maybe it's safer to work over here than in this location. You know, just helping someone think about those kinds of things.
I mean, we follow the harm reduction model completely. And, you know, with some of the youth that I'm thinking about, I'm wondering if there's actually something even more concrete. But what the youth tell us is that, you know, they can't find a job. No one's going to hire them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we hear over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering,
I know that in San Francisco they've had job fairs,
mm-hmm.
where they bring in employers and specifically to have other trans people come and talk to them about that sort of thing. So
yeah, and
there are some structural programs in that regard.
Yeah, because I mean, and that's really important, because if you're saying, oh, you can do all this stuff and you can get a job, and then they try to go get a job and they have a really terrible experience, I mean, that's very difficult to go through. So part of it is preparing and helping, okay, what is the community like? Maybe if we know that this target is pretty friendly, we have a couple youth who already have gotten jobs there, maybe that's a good place to go apply. And it will really depend. And at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, there's also a transgender employment program. It's really one woman. But so there are some resources that we can reach out to help them.
Any other questions, comments?
Was anybody interested in hearing about the Tranny Rockstar program?
Yeah.
Okay, I could just say a little blurb about it. So that's another program at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and it's based on a public opinion leader model. So the idea is it's HIV prevention education, but really involving the youth by preparing them to educate their peers. And the name Tranny Rockstar came about by talking with the youth one of the young people who had become more kind of an advocate in the community came up with the idea, and the other youth really liked it. And so the idea is that they're sort of, you know, rock stars in the way that they're becoming advocates and supporting each other and getting accurate information out about HIV risk and prevention. And they do get reinforced for bringing friends to the program. So it's about weekly. Sometimes Bambi takes some time off, but it's a two-hour group once a week that really goes through. There's a core part of it that goes through a certain curriculum around what is HIV, what are risky behaviors, medium risk, low risk, how to communicate and negotiate about condom usage and things like that. And then it's an ongoing kind of support group around that. And it really encourages youth to be kind of getting that advocacy, leadership mindset, and go out and spread the word. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Hopefully I got it right. All right. But.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a question if there's resources for
non-existing. The one idea I've been thinking, I've been playing around with, but haven't really had the resources to follow through, is to set up a trans health fund in my area that will allow people who don't have access to health care to be able to go see a doctor, and who will then utilize the fund to help pay for the blood tests and their physical, just so that, and just to help them keep their the health going. But right now, it's again needing more resources, needing more time, and so forth. It's based on the abortion fund program, where women who don't have funds for an abortion would go to local organization, which anyway, it's based on that. It's just a local funding for people who want health care. Yeah.
Does anyone on the panel know of any advocacy activities going on to allow trans people to get hormone therapy without having to change their gender on their insurance? Like, for instance, for Medicaid, you have to change your gender to get hormone therapy, and sometimes a real barrier.
I think that varies from place to place. I know that in Pittsburgh, I've known people who are receiving hormones but haven't changed their gender.